Als nächstes freuen wir uns auf Maike van Stiphout. Sie wird ihren Vortrag in Englisch halten, Integrating Nature and Urban Planning. Maike kommt aus den Niederlanden zu uns. Sie ist Mitbegründerin des Landschaftsbüros DS in Amsterdam. Unlängst, also von 2014 bis 2018, war sie Leiterin der Studienrichtung Landschaftsarchitektur an der Akademie für Architektur in Amsterdam. Also sie hat dort ein Programm kuratiert, wo genau dieses Thema integratives Planen mit Naturplanen, Lehrbeauftragte, Seminare und so weiter zur Folge hatte. Also sie hat das kuratiert und war der Motor, der Promoter von diesem Thema. Sie will nicht nur eine Brücke zwischen Landschaftsarchitekten und Architekten, Experten aus Ökologie und Biologie bauen, sondern auch zu Herstellern von Baustoffen. Wie gesagt, ihr Ziel ist das, die Aufmerksamkeit für naturinklusives Planen und Entwickeln und Bauen mit vielen großen Projekten auf nationaler und internationaler Ebene hat sie unter Beweis gestellt, was sie darunter versteht. Ausgangspunkt war eine Reise nach San Francisco, also nach Kalifornien, mit einem Projektentwickler und einer Gruppe von Menschen, wo dann eigentlich so ein Shift in ihr stattgefunden hat und sie anhand von Bauten aus den 60er Jahren, die sie besucht haben und nachgespürt haben, was ist diese Interaktion vom Gebäude mit der Natur, hat sie für sich entschieden, diesen Weg viel stärker zu beschreiten und Verbündete zu suchen auf diesem Weg, so wie wir das auch hier in diesem Symposium machen. Und das verlangt noch sehr viel Interdisziplinarität. Und wie das jetzt geht, wird sie uns selbst sagen. Dankeschön. Danke, Michael.
Ja, thank you. Okay, thank you. Thanks for being invited. And thanks for being able to talk English. And the movie was in English, which is also a good introduction for the switch in language. When I was studying in Wageningen, landscape architecture, I earned some money by being a guide in your mountains, in the Swiss and Austrian mountains. And I was a nature guide, so I took the group of people up in the mountains and explained to them about the flowers, about the geology, the landscape morphology, the minerals. But of course, I learned this all at home. So I always had to check who was in the team, whether there were geologists in my group or biologists, who could correct my knowledge, or correct me. So to start with, I would like to know from you, who here is a biologist or ecologist? Okay, I feel safe. and who of you is a designer? So creating, urbanist, architect, landscape architect. It's quite a lot. And who of you is making that what the designers think should be there? Builders, constructors. No less. Okay. So I will talk about how to make a plan more nature inclusive. It's a sort of a lecture. After these 15 minutes, I think you think different. I hope you think different and you do it from stretch on the right way. And I think it's this, the time is right to start thinking more nature inclusive. Though inclusive is the word at the moment. Everything is inclusive. So also nature inclusive. Because there are two tendencies. One is there is a growth of the world population, which is mainly in the cities. So imagine that for us designers, the work will be in the cities. We will be thinking about how to build in an urban environment. And secondly, the main species abundance is going down, but it's going down faster outside the urban areas. And noting this, I thought, well, then we have a double task. We have to construct for the people in the cities, we also have to invite the animals and the plants in the cities, because they're coming to the cities. And now we have to do with these materials. So how can we make more cities more hospitable for that what lives with us? I really like the citation from Jan Martel, Life of P, the book, where he says, if you took the city of Tokyo and turned it upside down and shook it, you would be amazed at the animals that fall out. And then he has a lot of animals we don't have in our cities. Some we do, but there are ostriches and baboons. But what it says is also, if you put Veldkirch upside down and you shook it, you'll be surprised how much animals will fall out of it. And this says something about that we are already living with animals and plants, but we are not always aware of it. And as Elisabeth said, nature is improving our quality of life. And as soon as we talk about quality of life, we're there. What's in it for me as a human being? Well, quality of life, that's where we go for. And one of the intriguing philosophers that I follow is Bruno Latour. And he said, we cannot longer maintain the distorted dichotomy between culture and nature. Also, cities should not be centered around men, but around life. So, and it's true that there's a new movement in the design world to work more with nature and to make nature-inclusive projects. This is a project of my office, which was featuring on the folder. But I also saw things like this in Paris, which we can discuss this afternoon in the workshop, where you see that nature plays a role, a new role in the city, capturing water, giving shadow, being hiding place for animals and also connectors. This is social housing in Paris, imagine. Giving an ambience, which is nice. And this is all about quality of life. When you see this, you think, oh, I could live there, even in Paris. So a biodiverse design can contribute to measurable factors. So it's not only nice, but it can also contribute to measurable factors that contribute to the wealth and quality of cities, life in cities, which can eventually, and that's for some of us really nice, be expressed in monetary value. A house on the water side is 10% more expensive than a house not on the water side. So, and the thing is that this building, Bosco Verticale, made in 2014, was sold immediately and completely because people like to live like this. And what does it do for the city? Well, it drinks a huge amount of water, like 6 million liters of water a year. It's producing 10 tons of oxygen. It's absorbing 19 tons of CO2. It's lowering the temperature in your room at least by 4 to 6 degrees. And these things are, you know, it's measurable. There's a university looking on it and observing it and measuring it. And as soon as it's measurable, you can talk about it with the economists. Well, then, as I said, I will give you a little lecture how to do how to make more nature-inclusive cities. And I saw this citation from the chair of the, I'd say, the Scottish Wildlife Trust, and he said, "We are now an urban animal for the first time in human history, but we are still failing to design our cities in a way that incorporate nature." So let's do it. When we make a proposal for a building, you always have the requirements for man. Architects among us know about it. How big is a bathroom? How big is a living room? How many apartments and what type of apartments? But we sometimes forget that there's also a requirements for plants and animals. We can make the same list for tits. We know what a tit wants. And we know what the plants want. So we can include the requirement of plants and animals very, very early in the process. And if you look for the requirements of plants and animals, well, you can just list it and find it on the internet. They have their sizes of their houses. They have their size of the window and the door. And their preferred orientation on the building and height. And they have their preferred way of growing or sticking or nesting. So it's they're quite organized, but you just have to get grip on that. And if you translate some of those requirements on the walls of a building, you get images like this. And this makes it communicable with architects and developers to know which of the animals wants to live where in the buildings. So that's what we have to work on. So get started. Ken Young is an architect, and he has his office already for 25 years, an Asian architect. And he says, architecture, if it is to fully embrace the nature world, must be designed to be a living, constructed ecosystem and not inert, denatured structures. And I think you all agree on that. That's why we are here. But how? It's always a question how. You can say a lot of things, but how? So I try to explain you how. First of all, work in an interdisciplinary way and work with the cross-section. Why the cross-section? Which is actually a landscape tool. It's because in this cross-section, I can talk with architects about the buildings. I can talk with the urbanists about sizes and the streets and the edges of the water line, etc. And I can talk with the landscape architects about the plants, about the role of the vegetation. And now comes in the interconnectedness of all. So if you want to work nature inclusive, always bring, in any scale you work, a cross-section. And then there are three design tools. The first one is situate projects. And I will just run through it with some images, but just to sum them up, situate the project in a city as if it's a mountain landscape. I think for you it's no problem. Define at least one urban biotope as your client and design in variation in scale and size, porosity, and aim for diversity in use and maintenance activities. So let's run through it with some images to stick it in your mind. Situate the project in a city, as were it a mountain landscape. Could have been outside here. So in this case, I also consider Veldkirch as a mountain landscape. It's more rocky than some of the surroundings. And if you look at it in this way, you imagine that Veldkirch or Amsterdam or wherever you are is part of a continuous terrain. So you go from 2D to 3D. I mean, talk about connecting, interconnectedness is in the 3D. Because a mountain is 3D. And then secondly, define at least one urban biotope. For whom are you designing it? My commissioners ask, okay, I know the people, but for who else should I design? And in this case, what I show is these communities that like to live with us. And you can order them. That's why I asked the biologist, if there are any biologists or ecologists, you can order, you can make groups out of it and say, well, let's design here for the small animals who like to live in gardens. Or let's design in case of a tower for those who like to live in rocky circumstances. And with those animals goes the food that they like or the conditions that they like. So you can define your client. And if you define a client, you can make a design. And you can scale this up. You can say this for a building, you can say this for a park or a little corner. We can also say this for a district. And that's what we did for a district of Sloterdijk. I'll show this afternoon. And what we did there is you look at a district as a void in a more green area. And with those urban biotopes, urban because they live with us, with those urban biotopes you make from the district a connector. And then everything is fine at the end. Okay, then for the designers, there are three rules. And for the those who have to check the plans, there are three things that you can say, please do some more of it. First, variation in scale and size in urban contexts. Of course, you know, the more scale, like in the mountains, the more possibilities for animals to settle. The moisture areas, there are cold areas, there are windy areas, there are all these different microclimates make it possible for different animals to find and plants to find their place. So variation scale can be in an urban context, very important, that it's not just this repetition. It can also be on a building level. And it can also be on a facade level. So you can always scale up and down. So when you are a commissioner, or when you are an architect, or a landscape architect, always look at the size and the scale. Can I do more? And the more, the better. I know that these glass buildings are trendy, these slick glass buildings, but they don't have much size and variation in size. The other way. Porosity, the second one of the three. The more porosity, the more possibilities for animals and plants, of course. So you can always test if the design has enough porosity, can it have more porosity? So can I make walls more porous, like this one where the concrete facade is... Oh, this poor bird. Is that cut off? Which is designed, I will tell about this afternoon, but it's designed for these animals, and the detailing in the building is designed in a way that these animals can nestle, but it's also details. So it's aesthetics, which go together. Yeah. Porosity in brick facades. So you can do a lot with porosity. And at last, the diversity in use and maintenance, because once it's built, you, by maintaining it, you can do a lot. In this case, by cleaning some spaces, you prohibit species to get there. But you can also do this in a nice way. Again, cleaning is not always wrong, but you have to do it in an aesthetic way. And diversity in use maintenance is also for the roofs, for example, which offers much more possibilities than we do have today. And it can also be aesthetic to leave these things. And it is coming. I see this happening in the streets. I see that without all these... we cannot clean with the Roundup anymore. So please help those who maintain the streets to let the grasses grow where it also is aesthetic. That's what I see happening at the moment. So with these three tools and these three steps, I hope that from now on you will look different to your work and make your projects more nature inclusive. Thank you.